Another rash of fatal shootings in Jacksonville leads to more calls to stop the violence. How is this time any different? We'll take your calls in just a moment. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, faith leaders in studio speak out on the, once again, gun violence in Jacksonville that has taken lives, including that of an infant. We want your calls right now at 549-2937. Then later, the Rotary Foundation celebrating 100 years and major progress on the global eradication of polio. We'll tell you about it. Plus, if you're looking for something fun to do this weekend, just download a new and local app. It's called Intego. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, the gun violence that continues to plague this community claimed more lives over the weekend. Days after a Jacksonville shooting that killed an infant, his mother, and another young woman near the Cleveland Arms apartments, city and faith leaders are calling for solutions and information that can solve the crimes. Church leaders have offered sanctuaries as safe havens, as Mayor Lenny Curry and Sheriff Mike Williams asked the public to share any information they may have with police. It's the latest in a long line of gun-related tragedies in this city, a fatal shooting incident that has taken the lives not just of adults, but also a child. Right now, we're pleased to welcome in studio the Reverend John Guns, founder of Operation Save Our Sons. Good morning, Reverend Guns.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Pastor Dr. John Allen Newman. He is senior pastor at the Sanctuary at Mount Calvary Church. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Already getting your calls. We want your calls as we discuss this tragedy in Jacksonville. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Weigh in on our Facebook page. Reverend Guns, let's begin with you. You're the founder of Operation Save Our Sons. You've been active in the community for years now, working with young people to try to address some of the problems that continue to lead to these tragedies. This morning, people are saddened and they're angry that we keep seeing this happen in Jacksonville over and over again.
You know, it's interesting, Melissa, as we, you know, pause and we begin to wrestle with this yet again. I think Pastor Newman, or as I affectionately call him, Jay New, Pastor Newman and I, and several other leaders have really sat down and begin to look critically at this in conversation with our mayor and our sheriff and other community leaders. We understand that there are a couple of dynamics. One, we have to begin to critically look at the economic opportunities that are available within the Northwest Quadrant. I think we've had that conversation for years, but I don't think we've ever strategically addressed it. And I think the other dynamic is the fact that there are some very real challenges within Jacksonville, as in many cities, as relates to a race and how that plays out. And then and then at the end, and I'm not gonna and I'm not gonna give excuses, there is a culture among this generation of African American men and women, young men and young women, whereby violence has kind of become the way by which they resolve conflict. And gun violence particularly has become a way by which that occurs or is addressed. And so we have to begin to change the dynamics and the culture of our cities and begin to look critically at what we have to do to take ownership for the problems that we're facing.
Pastor Newman, it's not as though we've never been here before. During the mayoral administration of John Payton, a little girl was killed in her house, Drashana Davis.
Yeah.
And at that time, the city came together in absolute devastation and put together a series of initiatives to try to get at some of the root causes of this that Reverend Guns just mentioned. It was called the Jacksonville Journey.
Yes.
We have tried to address this problem in the city for years.
True.
And we are not seeing it adequately funded. What do you think needs to be done to get at this once again?
It is such a broad problem, and I agree with you that the Jacksonville Journey did put resources to try to, you know, get to the root causes and find some best practices to ameliorate this problem. But the reality is that you have a systemic problem that goes back generationally. You have the influence of a broader cultural violence in the country that trickles down in terms of guns, glorification of guns in media and so forth and so on, the identification of personhood with violence as a means for resolving conflict. So you have all this as almost like a perfect storm. Then you talk about the neglect in terms of early intervention. You talk about the lack of proper role modeling for our young boys and young girls. So you look at this as a perfect storm. And the truth is, the immediate impact for resolving this is going to always be law enforcement in the immediacy in terms of arrests and prosecutions and so forth. But the long-term implications are the attacking the systemic problems. And that does involve education. That does involve employment. That does involve the ability for the community to recognize that these are really all of our children, not just their kids on that side of town. When Jacksonville really decides these are all of our children, and from a guttural and visceral and foundational way, and come from that space, I think we can really begin to see some progress. But it's going to take that kind of ownership by the entire city.
549-2937. We'll go to your calls in a moment. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the fatal shooting Sunday in the 5100 block of Cleveland Road. Three people killed, two injured, one of the dead an infant, 11-month-old Tadashi Noel Williams, and his mother, 22-year-old Khadijah Monet Williams, also killed an 18-year-old in this incident. Reverend Guns, what about what Pastor Newman just said? Do you think that when we look at this problem, there is a lack of ownership in this city in terms of understanding that if a child is killed, no matter what zip code they're from, that's a tragedy for the entire city?
I totally agree. And it's interesting. I think it only is owned by all segments when it begins to affect the economics. When businesses or other entities begin to say, well, I don't think I want to come to Jacksonville because I heard that there's a violence issue or there's deficiency in the educational area, or if there is a major conflict between politics and law enforcement, or if there's da-da-da-da-da. And so now I think it's more of an issue because it has the potentiality of affecting business development, of attracting corporations. And sad but so, I think sometimes in our attempt as a community to have an intelligent conversation about it, we skirt around the fact that you know, as long as it's happening over there and it doesn't come across this bridge, I'm good. The problem, though, is it is affecting every segment of our community because ultimately none of us feel safe. Because there is a culture of violence and there is a glorification. And it's interesting, Melissa and John, yesterday, you know, some of us walked the community of Cleveland Arms because our church does real work there. And I was talking to a mother and it pained me so much. I talked to this mother, three boys, 14, 12, and 8. And I asked her, what do you need from us? And she said, I want to give my sons to you and I want you to help me raise them. They have no role model and they need a man that can help them. And so we're looking to intensify the effort of just being presence, because ultimately people don't want us to fix their problems. They want us to partner with them as they work through the process of resolution.
That's what your organization, Operation Save Our Sons, is all about.
Yes.
Yeah. And let me ask you both as a follow-up. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, some years ago, 10 years ago, the Jacksonville Journey was formed with this multi-pronged approach to get at all of these root causes of violent crime in Jacksonville: poverty, educational aspects, recidivism, offenders leaving incarceration and then unable to find jobs, youth programs for kids, particularly after school from 3 to 6 o'clock at night, mentoring programs, a whole bunch of interlocking things, looking at how to get at this problem at the roots. As you said, these are issues that go back generations. We saw that program launch to great fanfare during the Peyton years. And then the recession hit, and then City Hall has changed hands twice since then. The Jacksonville Journey is still around, but do you think that it is doing the job it was set out to do? Is it adequately funded? What do you think needs to be done?
Well, John can speak to this as well, but I know that we've had some conversations with the mayor about the resources being put back into the Jacksonville Journey, and he's committed to doing that. But I think that to see the Jacksonville Journey or any one particular entity as a magic bullet or a quick fix is probably, you know, misapplied in terms of thinking that's going to result in what we want to see happen. It's going to take a well-rounded collective effort in terms of the journey. Again, I go back to the educational system. We have to make sure that our children are being dealt with educationally properly, because when a child cannot find opportunity, then the streets get them.
Yes.
And so, you know, John, you're right, it comes down to economics, not just in terms of our businesses and how we look in terms of our corporate picture to the rest of the world. But young people who can't find work, the streets will grab them, because there's always opportunity in the streets. So we have to have alternatives for them. The Jacksonville Journey is a tremendous step, and when it's funded properly, and again, the mayor has shared that he does have a commitment to do that, but it's going to take an awful lot of things. And part of that also is in the African-American community owning the fact that, you know, listen, if you have a 14, 15-year-old grandchild and he's coming in with a 60-inch flat screen, and you're saying, okay, thank you, baby, for my birthday present, you know, you're owning the fact that there's something going on here that you need to address. And so, you know, there's a whole lot of tentacles to this octopus. And so, we lose them one at a time. We got to reclaim them one at a time.
Let's go to your calls now for Pastors John Guns and John Newman here in studio. Robert in Green Cove Springs. Hi, Robert. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is actually Captain Bob Russo, and I operate something called First Coast Maritime Academy. We partnered with a group called Mad Dads, and what we're doing is we're providing vocational training to youth at risk to train them to become employed as merchant seamen, which is a good occupation. They start out at about $40,000. The question I have is, we talk a lot about having programs like this, but we absolutely don't fund them. And I'm wondering why, from your perspective, none of these programs actually get funded.
Thanks for the call.
Well, I can't always speak in an informed manner to just that. But I think that there's a lot of dynamics attached to that. One, getting funding has become so political. Until a lot of times, if you don't have the right connections, you may not even be aware that the funding is possible. And then secondly, and if truth be told, and of course, you know, as one who's been involved in looking for funding over the last few years, you also find yourself having to work through the dynamics of whether you're even capable of managing the reporting process. Because sometimes reporting is difficult. And so it's a lot of dynamics that, you know, that's tied to why one entity gets funded over another, why you know, one organization gets money when another doesn't. Sometimes it's the composition of your board. It's so many different dynamics, Melissa.
Let me ask you both, too. What about the notion that nothing really of import was going to get funded in the city until the pension reform situation was resolved? That's been resolved. Okay, so now we are looking at a new fiscal picture, hopefully, for the city of Jacksonville, mm-hmm. where more funds could conceivably be freed up. At the same time, over and over again, we keep seeing this problem. We keep seeing city leaders say that this is unacceptable and this has to stop. And I guarantee you, though, on Friday, when we talk about this on our media roundtable, as one of the biggest stories of the week, we will get a call, at least one call, from a listener who will point out, we can fund big scoreboards at the stadium, we can fund anything like that, but we can't fund programs that can help children that are in incredibly dangerous and unhealthy situations. We can't seem to get our heads around looking at how to stop violence in this city and literally saving young people's lives.
Well, let me just say one thing about what the caller said, and I think that it's critical that we recognize this, and that is that there are always going to be capacity limitations when it comes to funding from the government anyway. you know, there's this not an unending checkbook and there are limited resources. But the other thing is also, this is where the private sector comes into play. The Mad Dads does a phenomenal job. Just like Save Our Sons does a phenomenal job. Where are the private companies, the entrepreneurs who are willing to say, you know what, let me make an investment in these organizations to help them? Because, you know, part of being a collective in terms of our, you know, community is working together to solve problems. And so it is, as John said earlier, it's in the business interests, the business community's interests. In fact, yesterday I attended a press conference at the Chamber where the Chamber has made a tremendous step in being a part of the Ban the Box movement so that returning citizens and ex-felons can come back and not have to immediately admit that they've been
in trouble. People can get a job.
They can get a job because the economic and that job and vocational piece is critical to the success. But whenever we're looking this always to the government for just, you know, write a check for this, that, and the other, there's competition for that.
Yeah.
And that's just real. You know, that's just reality. There's competition for it. And sometimes, you know, it gets, John said, political, who you know and who's able to have more influence. That happens. And we like to say that doesn't, but it really does in reality. So those are some of the issues we've got to really contend with and deal with. But I would just call on the private sector also to step up because they need to have skin in the game.
Yes, as you said, Pastor Guns, this affects business.
Yeah.
A company looking at these headlines might say, well, I don't know that we might want to move our corporate headquarters to Jacksonville.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I think that when we look at the conversations recently about the Jacksonville journey, and we have had some conversations with the mayor and others in his administration, and there are a lot of conversation going on. Oftentimes, the money is really directed, I believe, based upon how the city understands the priorities. And right now, if we don't understand that this is a priority, then we're going to mismanage not only this opportunity through the pension resolution to meet a major need, but more importantly, we're going to mismanage more lives. More lives are going to be lost because we don't put the resources where they need to be.
Herman is downtown. Hi, Herman. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Pastors, how is everybody doing?
Great, thanks.
Good. Just a statement, I guess a couple questions, and I'm also a fellow broadcaster, and that really means nothing, but I tend to try and remain silent at least until the family have buried their loved ones. And as proclaimers of the word, have you guys kind of felt like, well, maybe as proclaimers and preachers, we really missed it? Is that we really not preached enough about ethics and morals and integrity? And personally, I don't think programs and money can really fix morals and integrity. And I just think as proclaimers, that's really what we're going to have to horn in, particularly most of the people who you guys are burying really don't go to anybody's church. And there's a reason why they don't go. And I think that needs to be hit, which is probably a lack of respect for leadership, being bishops, pastors. And that authority starts at home, even the disrespect for fathers. So I don't think role models can fix this problem. Only a dad, only a father can fix the home. But I like of giving dad his position, his posture at home, and even hitting it from the pulpit, and those kind of things. And I mean, if you study the Pew study, it shows that folks are just leaving church. And I think the reason is they don't want to fix their morals and integrity.
Well, I think
All right. Thanks for that call.
A great call. I think also we need to recognize that there has been a declination in the trust that people have in institutions. And part of that institutional devaluation has also been the church. The church doesn't have the voice it used to have. It is not quite as much as some of us want to, you know, go back and hearken to the good old days nostalgically. The church does not, in this season, operate with the same level of influence that it once did. And a lot of those young persons do not go to anyone's church. And so we have to recognize that as pastors, we have to employ other methods. And so, you know, I applaud what John is doing with Save Our Sons, and that they go out into the schools, they go out into the communities, they walk, you know, in Cleveland Arms, and you know, they speak to residents. You know, we were speaking to the mother of the 18-year-old who got murdered last night. Mm-hmm. So we are having conversations with people who are in the midst and in the throes of it, not just, you know, pontificating about it. But without question, the church has lost influence, and we have to recognize that that is the truth. And we have to address where the young people are, and they're not always in church.
And so meeting kids where they are, if that's the key, as you said, you go to schools, you go to neighborhoods, you need the community's help to do that.
And it's interesting, and John mentioned this last night. You know, we sat together after church, and he ministered at our church, and so he, you know, we sat with this mother, and Melissa, to see her, to sense her. This is the second child she's lost to murder in the last 7 years.
Yes.
A son 19, and now a daughter 18. And
I didn't know that.
Yes. And, wow. And a part of it is that, you know, before talking with her, you know, a group of about 30, 40 of our ministry partners and law enforcement walked Cleveland Arms. And I had a conversation with the grandmother, has a 3-year-old granddaughter, didn't ask where the mother or the father was, but the child is in her custody. She said, "I won't allow my child to come outside, because I don't trust the streets." And and what bothered me was that a lot of these communities have become prisons. Now, I will give Frank at Demco a lot of credit. They're really trying to work to change the culture in Cleveland Arms. And they're allowing others to come in. But I think it begins with this collective understanding that, and John is right, respect for traditional institutions have been lost, and the glorification of violence has occurred in an accelerated and exponential way. And so now what we're dealing with is the fact that oftentimes media doesn't take any accountability either, because some of these images are being perpetuated by media, and we're not holding everybody accountable for their unique voice in the creation of this culture.
Johnny's in Washington Heights. Hi, Johnny. Good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I just wanted to make an observation, and it's funny because this is a conversation on everybody's table right now, and this is the first generation of children, I'm going to call them kids, that have been raised by the internet, and they see the hypocrisy in which they live, whether it's from them being persecuted for drugs, when the persons who allow the drugs to come in are not persecuted as far as on the big level, things of that nature. That's just one example. And these kids will not respond to any of these programs that you have, the church or anything. So the thing that we're faced with as a community is being able to connect with them and show them something real. I'm not sure how we can do it, but that's just an observation I have, because Hearn from downtown pretty much took everything that I was going to say.
Thanks for that call. You know, he's right, and I think that for a lot of folks right now, they really are trying to find some hope.
Yeah.
I think that this endless cycle of violence has made many people in this community lose hope that we can ever address this in a meaningful way. What do you think, gentlemen?
Let me say this before John chimes in. It's so interesting. Yesterday, I ended up in this conversation, as I stated, with this grandmother of this 3-year-old, and I asked her the question we always ask: what can we do? And she looks at me and she says, "Programs aren't going to save us or this community." I said, "Okay, we do programs." Okay. She said, "Just come out and get to know us." And it was in that singular moment, in that singular statement, Melissa and John, where I understood that there needs to be a reconstruction of our approach. We're investing millions of dollars to try to fix people who really just want relationships.
Yeah.
And so our city officials, in many of their eyes, our young people don't trust us, because they only see us when the cameras are on and the crisis is big. But shootings occur every night in Cleveland Arms. Gunfire is how they go to bed. Many of them are afraid to even talk about what they see for fear of retribution. This is not about you can't throw money at it, and yet you have to invest money in it. But yeah, there has to be the fact that people have to see the heart of the city. And so I get frustrated when people get on, like on the radio, and they talk about the church don't do this, this don't do this. And then a lot of times I say to people, but when was the last time you walked the streets and you had a conversation with the mother who lost a child?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you were willing to make an investment of your time and your energy. There was nothing glamorous about pastoring on the north side of Jacksonville. It's work. It's painful. It's a challenge. But at the end of the day, when you make the effort, I genuinely believe that in the end, you have impact in the lives of someone.
People, let me close by asking you this, Pastor Newman. Mm-hmm. People listening right now who care, who want to help, but don't know how. And they feel helpless, and they feel as though there's no way they can make an impact on this problem. What is one thing any average person could do right now to try to be part of a solution to this problem?
Well, first of all, I think it's important that whoever is right in your reach, whatever young person is in your reach, pay attention to them. When they're younger, they're much more applicable to being molded into the kind of citizens we'd like for them to be. After a child gets to be, and I mean, this is crazy, but, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, it's almost too late at that point. So, you know, if you have a grandchild, if you have a child that's young in your reach, pay attention to them. Don't let them just be, you know, influenced by anything. Be careful of what the gentleman have great call that came in, the internet generation. I go to, you know, Apple Store, and I see 5 and 6 year olds doing things with the computers I can't do. Yeah. You know, as Margaret Mead said, every generation, things get younger. So what I'm saying to you is, very simply, is that when that child is moldable, when they're 2 and 3 and 4 years old, you need to be instilling things in them because they have access to information. They have access to pictures of violence, and they're shaping who they are in terms of their personality development. And if they get embedded in, it becomes a part of their hard wiring as to a culture of violence that they live in every day. They will grow up into that thing that they perceive as their sense of identity, and that's so dangerous. So what can they do? Maybe they don't have the resources to write a check for $1 million, but you can spend quality time with the child and give them values. But of course, it's generational, so the person giving values can only give the values that they themselves possess. So the church has a responsibility, civic organizations, everybody's got to do it. Let me say one thing that's provocative as I go, and I know this is very, very provocative. It's not racist, but it's provocative. Do you think if there was a shot or there were shots every night in Ponte Vedra, do you think if there were people being found in parking lots along South A1A that we would be having the same conversation? Probably not. And that's not to throw stones. It's just to give context to the things our culture tolerates. And we need to be asking ourselves, you know, every citizen, if this was happening in my community, what would I be doing?
Thanks for issuing that to our listeners. And thanks for being here.
Glad to do it.
Pastors John Guns and John Newman with us in studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS. anytime, anywhere. Become a member, sign in, and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we're going instrument shopping at Home Depot.
Like renovated the bathrooms and the kitchens, and that's where I come, renovate my music.
The world is an instrument, according to Brazilian percussionist Ciro Baptista. That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich.
WJCT and FSCJ Artist Series present an intimate conversation with Lydia Bastianich, host of PBS's Lydia's Kitchen. The event is Saturday, December 3rd at 8 p.m. at the Times Union Center. Join us for an evening of conversation and storytelling, celebrating our love of Italian food. VIP tickets available. Ticket info at fscjartistseries.org.
So join me. Life is a combination of magic and pasta. Noi che felicia.
Welcome back. Well, the Rotary Foundation is celebrating its centennial this year. First formed in 1917, Rotary's purpose is simply to do good around the world. They fight disease, promote peace, support education, and more. Now, the hallmark project of Rotary Foundation is the long campaign to eradicate polio. And that initiative has seen huge success globally. Marshall Butler is Rotary's current district governor here in our area, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, congratulations. Rotary celebrating 100 years. That's a big achievement.
It absolutely is. The organization does fantastic things around the world and here locally.
Absolutely. An incredible organization. And, you know, as I mentioned, Rotary is strongly associated with the project, the global project, to eradicate polio. This started some 30 years ago when polio was more common around the world.
That's right. So the Rotary decided to eradicate polio in 1980. In 1985, we began our Polio Plus campaign. But truly, Rotary has been involved in the fight to eradicate polio and the fight against polio for many, many years.
And in 2016, there have only been, so far this year, 32 cases of polio documented anywhere in the world. That is an incredible reduction.
It's amazing because when you think about when we began this campaign in 1985, there were 1,000 cases of polio every single day, nearly 360,000 cases per year.
But the goal is zero. How is Rotary working to get polio completely eradicated?
So zero matters because as long as there is one case of polio on Earth, it's only a plane ride away from anywhere. There's no cure for it. So until we take care of eradicating it from the face of the Earth, we have a lot of work to do.
Now, Rotary is partnered with the CDC, the World Health Organization, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation on the polio campaign. And of course, let's talk about the fact that you have a personal interest in this. Your father has lived his entire life with polio. Is that right?
That's right. I say that my Rotary story started in 1945 when my father was diagnosed with polio. Dad was 4 years old at the time, and he spent the next year of his life at Hope Haven Hospital here in Jacksonville. Dad was in quarantine as a four-year-old. The only time my father saw his mom, his dad, his sister was behind a glass window. And so it's a very personal issue to me, and that's what drives my passion.
Yeah, because I think for younger people especially that don't remember those days, people might not realize what a scourge this disease was.
You know, even people in my generation, I grew up in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Even in my generation, folks don't know that my peers did not know about polio. Polio was very real to me because of my personal connection. But in 1955, April of 1955, Dr. Jonas Salk invented the polio vaccine. It was deemed safe, effective, and potent. And millions of children immediately received that sugar cube and received that vaccination. We haven't seen a case of polio in the United States since the late 1970s. And so a lot of folks here, a lot of the younger generations don't really know what the impact polio has until they see the pictures from around the world and the impact that it has on lives where people are a lot like my dad. They're quarantined from their families, isolated.
You've told this story to all 61 Rotary clubs in this area to try to continue to keep the focus on this.
That's right. So I began my term as district governor on July 1st. And one of the tasks that you have as district governor is to visit all 61 clubs in your district. And so I've visited our district starting, we start up in Nassau County, go down to South Volusia, over to DeLand through Ocala, up to Gainesville. So I had the opportunity to tell the story. And it's amazing because as I tell the story, many other folks tell me, you know, I have a connection. This is my personal connection. This is why this is so important to me. So there are a lot of folks that have connections, and it really drives a lot of us.
Now, how can Rotary continue to get down to zero? What's your overriding focus on this to make sure that polio is completely eradicated from planet Earth?
You know, we have put together lots of processes. We have lots of data monitoring. A lot of resources are being poured into this. But also, many people are putting their lives on the line every day in Pakistan and Afghanistan because there's a lot of cultural misinterpretations or misunderstandings about what we're doing. And so a lot of folks are putting their lives on the line to make sure that every child gets those drops.
Yeah, and it's not that much of an investment to vaccinate a child.
It's
not much money.
It's
how much is it for each kid?
I believe it's about 20 cents per kid, 20 to 50 cents per kid for the drops. So, yeah, it's not a lot of money.
How can people find out more and be part of what Rotary is doing?
Sure. So the website for Rotary International is rotary.org. That's where you can find out lots about Rotary. Here locally, rotary6970.org. is a website that you can go to. Tomorrow, I'm actually heading to Tucson, Arizona, and I'm going to participate in what we're calling the Ride to End Polio. It's a 100-mile bike ride, and we're raising money. We're going to raise millions of dollars for this fight, and it's all going to be matched by Bill and Melinda Gates. Bill and Melinda Gates give us $2 for every dollar that we raise towards this campaign.
Fantastic. And by the way, Marshall, I learned this morning, he's known for his fancy pants. Marshall came in here with some amazing plaid pants. I guess this is like a daily sartorial look for you, and you look great. If you spot him around town, you'll know how to pick him out of a crowd.
Yeah. The joke was my face was for radio, but my pants are for TV.
He's Marshall Butler, Rotary's current district governor. Rotary.org for more about the global campaign to eradicate polio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Much more still to come. Stay with us.
Next thing I know, my shoulder's getting banged on so violently. And it's Foxy, and she's got four people with her. Foxy's from Brooklyn. I mean, I live in Brooklyn, and I love Brooklyn, but Foxy's from Brooklyn.
Join us next time for more True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT and Vistar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped at WJCT and all Vistar Credit Union locations and two men in a truck at 8849 Arlington Expressway. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
Welcome back. Well, they lend a helping hand where it's really needed most. They provide food, clothing, financial assistance to pay rent and to pay the JEA bill to the very neediest homes in our community. The Downtown Ecumenical Services Council, or DESC, helps families, and there are so many of them, who live paycheck to paycheck, where the smallest problem can become a crisis, like a car that breaks down, an illness, or an accident. It can be devastating. The need is so great that the United Way's 211 crisis line reports that DESC is its second most referred agency for emergency assistance. DESC helps families stay in their homes, stay together, and avoid delinquency ruined credit, eviction, and homelessness. You'd be amazed how many families are right on the edge of that out here in our community. Now, for years, Desk had an annual fishing tournament called Big Bubba, which is so awesome. Big Bubba went away during the recession, but guess what? This year, Bubba is back. Julie Hanley is fundraiser chair for Desk and joins us now with more about the organization and Bubba. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. Desk has been in the community almost 40 years, and as I said, it really is a lifeline to families who are on the brink of absolute disaster. It can't be overstated what good work you're doing in this community. Let me just say that.
Thank you. It is an honor to be with this agency that lends such a terrific helping hand.
Now, let's talk a little bit about what Desk does. Say a family can't pay the rent, can't pay JEA's bill, or whatever it is. How does Desk help out?
Well, what we do is on Monday morning, we get these referrals from the United Way 211, and we answer the phone. This past Monday, over 200 people called in. The need is very great in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
But what we are doing mm-hmm. is what we help do with that when those phone calls come in is we make an appointment, and if they are qualified, we provide financial aid for JEA bills and rent to a family that has elderly, disabled, or children in the family. We can only do this once every 5 years, but when we follow up, we see that we are able to keep these families in their homes.
You've helped thousands of families over the years.
We really have.
Yeah. And so for years, your big annual fundraiser was a fishing tournament. It was called Big Bubba. We're going to talk in a minute about Where's Bubba, which is bringing Bubba back to the community. But right now, we've got a call for you from Don on the South Side. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you. This is wonderful. Great show today.
Thanks.
I'm an ex-carpenter, and I'm retired, and I've got a garage full. I can barely move of tools and things that I think would sell at a yard sale or some sort of. Is there anything that you guys do that I could benefit by donating all this?
We would love to work with you on that. You and I both know that tools are always the hottest item at a garage sale. Let's plan one together. It'll be Don's garage sale.
Don's.
Hey, that sounds good.
Yeah, stay on the line. We will connect you with Julie as soon as she gets off the air, okay?
Thanks, Don.
All right, stay on the line, Don. How about that? You need the help of the community in all of these different creative ways. People want to help. It's just a matter of getting the word out.
You know, Melissa, we have almost 60 volunteers that will help us at Desk throughout the month. We're dependent on them.
Absolutely. Now, whether you want to volunteer like Don, donate an item like Don, or you just want to help this cause, there are ways to do that, beginning with Saturday night. Now, as I said, for years, you had a fishing tournament called Big Bubba, which is, I love that. You stopped doing that after the recession hit because a lot of your sponsors were in the construction industry. That was a tough time for them.
Very.
But this year, Bubba is coming back. But this isn't going to be a real fishing tournament. What's going to be happening?
Oh, Melissa, we are going to have a boat inside the Haskell building. It's the back of a boat, but it's virtual fishing. And you're casting your line, and you can actually win a Bubba prize that night.
What are people going to win?
Oh, that's top secret. I'm sorry.
Oh, I see. But this is Saturday night at the Haskell building. It's called Where's Bubba? Live music, dinner, drinks, a virtual fishing simulator.
Right.
I've never tried that. That sounds interesting.
It's really fun. I did it, and it's terrific.
And so there will be, leading up to this event, look for Bubba sightings around town and on social media, and even maybe a surprise Bubba appearance. You're sort of building up the buzz, right?
The buzz is up. Bubba has been on Facebook quite a bit, but he wants to come in and get you today.
I can't wait to see how this turns out because I think a lot of people will be excited to see the return of Bubba to Jacksonville. It is called Where's Bubba? Benefiting Desk, the Downtown Ecumenical Services Council. Again, this is Saturday night at the Haskell Building on Riverside Avenue. How can people get tickets? $50 to support, as I said, the very neediest families in town. People can get their tickets where?
At deskjacks.org. Or they can call the Downtown Ecumenical Services Council, and that will be a way that they can purchase their tickets. Online's the easy way.
Fundraiser Julie Hanley, thanks for being with us. Again, that's Saturday night. And speaking of getting out and doing something fun around town, finally this hour, there is a lot to see and do across the First Coast. Sometimes, though, it can be tough to figure out what event or activity matches your mood. Until now. Intogo is a new app that helps people discover where to go and what to do across Jacksonville, all with the swipe of a screen. Now, Intogo was developed by Zach Schwartz. He's the winner of the 2015 OneSpark Technologies The City Dot Guide. And what Intogo does is it incorporates a list of thousands of fun places and things to do and nearly 3,000 events every month. I don't know how he did it, but we're going to find out right now as we welcome Zach Schwartz to Studio 5. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa, and thank you very much for having us today.
This is a free app. Anyone can download Intogo. And kudos, first of all, on this successful launch. Starting something like this up is always a challenge. But winning at OneSpark, I would think, helped you a little bit.
It definitely has.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of great support from the community so far. We're a bunch of local guys and software engineers that have built something incredible for Jacksonville. What we built is for the community, and it's built by the community to discover and explore Jacksonville like never before.
Now, this is a swiping app. You can swipe left or right. How does it work?
Well, there's actually two parts to Intogo. There's one side, the explore side, where you pick your filters. For example, set your distance, 10 miles, and your dates this week. And then you can select categories like live music, entertainment, family events, outdoor recreation, shopping, dining, and then swipe through recommendations of things to do. The other side of it is the Guide Me side. When you know more specifically that you're looking for live music, you can go into Guide Me, click Live Music, set your dates, and see all the live music happening from Fernandina to St. Augustine. Mm-hmm. We have very specific categories such as playgrounds for the parents. We have fishing for all of our fishermen on the First Coast. We have hiking trails and biking. We have nightlife and bars. We have shopping. We have live music, family festivals, fairs, events, destinations, almost everything that you can imagine that's fun. And all of Northeast Florida is now at your fingertips in one very simple, easy to use app.
You've combined some of the attributes of other really popular apps, everything from Tinder to TripAdvisor. You've also made this a one-stop app. People can buy tickets, make restaurant reservations, book rides on Uber, read restaurant reviews. They can do everything through your app?
Everything is fed in. We have the Yelp and Foursquare reviews, the Facebook posts for all the locations. And even furthermore, the community can add stuff. We built this as a unified platform where we can finally have one resource to find everything fun to do in Northeast Florida. So you can download the app, click on your profile, and add something to Intogo. Add a local event or add a fun business if we're missing it. We welcome everybody to use the app and to help us build the best directory and to maintain it as well.
And you just launched. What's the reaction been so far?
So far, in our first 10 days, we're at almost 2,000 downloads.
Great.
And we've had 16 five-star reviews across the board in the App Store. We haven't had any negative feedback come in, and social media posts are really fabulous. In fact, one person on Facebook specifically said she's lived here for 40 years and is finding fun things to do that she never knew existed in Northeast Florida right through the Intogo app.
Very cool. Now, it's a free app, Zach. What's your startup's long-term plan for profitability? How do you see this as a venture for you business-wise?
The reality is businesses like these, as far and few between as they are in Florida, they don't make money initially. And the goal is not essentially to make $1 billion right away. I mean, eventually we want to continue to build out new cities and improve quality of life for the rest of the community so that when you travel, you can find fun things to do. Mm-hmm. But currently we do sell tickets through Ticketmaster. So for the Jaguar games, for the Symphony Orchestra tickets, for Florida Theater, for 1904, for almost all these venues around town, even the Alhambra Theater and Dining, you can buy the tickets right through Intogo. You can book a ride through Uber. We're right now in talks with OpenTable to reserve a table, and we make a small commission on each of these opportunities.
And Intego, with a little luck, is going to spread around the country. There'll be one for each city. Is that the long-term plan?
That is the long-term plan, and we have to prove it right here in Jacksonville. We're really like an Instagram right here in our local community. And with your help, with your download, if you pull out your phone and just download Intego right now, it's 100% free, and I promise you'll find fun and cool activities to explore and enjoy. And if you download Intego, that means the world to us. We're grateful for each and every download and every single mention out there.
Download it now. It's free. It's the new app, Intego, Intogo, created right here in Jacksonville by Zach Schwartz. And kudos to you, Zach.
Thank you very much. And on final thoughts, just with everything going on in the world, and especially right here in our local community, Intego is a breath of fresh air to help our community discover Jacksonville like never before, to spread joy, happiness, and really improve the quality of life for all of Northeast Florida.
Don't we need that right now?
We do, yeah. Definitely.
It's nice to end the show with a smile. Thank you.
Thank you. Download today.
Again, that's a free app. It's called Intego. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. Next on Diane Rehm, some say the deep divisions among voters this year were exacerbated by fake news and personalized social media feeds. The demise of civic information and new efforts to build a better environment for news. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.